We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We are Haley from Taking a Kinder Path, Ashley from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves, and myself, Erin, from Everlearning. We're gathering to have conversations about family life and home education, most specifically unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed education, or as I often refer to it, whole life learning. We'll be sharing experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the virtual kitchen table. I'm Hayley, and I'm here tonight. Well, at least it's tonight for me. I know for you guys in Canada, it's probably early afternoon, but I'm here with Erin. Hi, Erin.
Hi, Hayley.
And I'm here with Ashley. Hello, Ashley.
Hi.
Hiya. Okay, so today we're gathered to explore some ideas around gently easing into the new year. And I actually had some feedback on our previous pod about setting intentions for the festive season. I can't remember exactly what we've called it. Can you guys remember?
I think it might have been, being intentional for the holidays, I think? Being intentional.
Yeah, that sounds it. Yeah.
Finding a fit for our families, maybe?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. I just got it. Yeah.
Okay.
You got it.
Thank you. Thank you, yeah. So anyway, somebody, a lovely listener, had been listening to that episode and they actually said how much they appreciated our ideas. I think actually it was you, Erin, I think, who brought up the idea of extending the season and not having to cram everything in before Christmas when we might be feeling particularly stressed, but that we could actually choose to extend the season, be a bit more relaxed and think about the weeks after Christmas or whatever holiday it is that you might celebrate. Thinking of the time afterwards as also a time that you could, you know, enjoy the things that you want to enjoy about the season. And be a bit more relaxed about the whole thing. So we're running with that a bit more and thinking about New Year's. So I guess it's about New Year's and I guess it's about embracing new beginnings, but it's about doing that in a more gentle fashion. So my first thought about all this, I guess, was about reframing goal setting. And I love setting goals. I love, you know, the excitement about possibilities and making lists. I love all that. But I wanted to kind of open up the idea of thinking about reframing or at least expanding our idea of goal setting so that we're not just thinking about what we might do, but also we're thinking about how we might like to feel and how we might like to be in the new year. And I guess that also extends to our children. So how we might like our children to feel or, you know, ideas around that for the new year. So one of the things related to that is ideas like having a word of the year. I kind of like that idea because often there's lots of lists online that you can look at where people have words of the year. And I think I've mentioned this in a blog post somewhere. We've had a word of the year. I say we all have our own words of the year. But I myself have had a word of the year for probably 8 years, I think. And often quite broad. So I've had in the past, it's been kindness. I think I had joy as one year. I had blossom as 1 year. And I think obviously those things they're quite vague and they open up lots of possibilities, I guess. That's the thing I was thinking about. So I don't know what you guys think about that.
I like the idea of it being broad or vague, Hayley, because I think, as you said, that then you can, sometimes it's hard to know how our year is going to unfold. So having that kind of bigger overarching word that maybe isn't too defined, I feel like that gives room for different things to come of that and to kind of take that from different angles. And I like what you said about intentions too, because I think the standard word people think about is resolution, right? A New Year's resolution. And more I do hear people talking about preferring to have an intention instead of a resolution or a word of the year. I have also heard people talk about thinking about how they want, how kind of what feeling they want or how they want to feel in the new year. Something that has come to me a little bit lately, I have to be honest, I'm not much of a goal setter, or as you both know, much of a list maker. You might remember back to our episode about lists, but I do appreciate how helpful that is for people and how much, like, I do wonder sometimes if I'm kind of waffling all over the place because I don't sort of zero in as much. But for some reason, when I try to do that, it feels, I don't know if it feels like I'm pinning myself down too much. So I've been trying to think about what is a fit for me and what do I kind of do naturally? And I think something that comes up for me is maybe just like, what part of myself do I want to bring more out of, or do I want to explore more? And maybe that's just a different way of, maybe that's just a different way of saying the same thing. I don't know, but.
No, I love that idea. Yeah. I love that idea. And the thing about setting intentions, I mean, we talk about that so much on this podcast, don't we? We talk about how we want to be intentional with our time, and we want to be intentional with our energy, and we want to be intentional about how we're showing up in the world. And I really like that idea of exploring different parts of yourself. And it kind of makes me think about, I don't know if have you read the book by The Happiness Project by Gretchen Rubin?
It's
kind of about habits, I suppose. I think she embarks on a year of it's her own personal happiness project, and every month she has something that she's going to explore or focus on. And it's a long time since I've read it, but I think, you know, there were things like one month she was going to explore ideas around exercise. So it wasn't necessarily that she set herself, in my memory anyway, that she was going to run every day. I mean, I may be wrong, but I feel like it was more, I keep saying the word vague, but it was more of an exploration rather than a very definite idea of what had to be done, I think, which is kind of like what you were saying, Erin. I like that idea of exploring.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder too if, you know, when you're talking about something like running or somebody setting a goal that they're going to do something every day, when we're talking to, you know, we're parents ourselves, and we're talking to parents, I think it can feel kind of self-defeating at times, can't it? Because you need to have a certain set of circumstances to make things work at times. Like, I know when I've had goals for, you know, walking or running or hiking, I mean, where I live, some of it's weather dependent, but when my kids were little, it would depend on a lot of things. It would depend on how they were doing. It would depend on whether they're, you know, my husband was available to be there for me to go out. Or so it's, I wonder too, if as a parent that can get a little bit tricky, especially if you have young kids. There's so many factors.
Yeah. I was thinking specifically about goals and goal setting. Well, I'll start by saying, that I do find usually with the new year, I find thinking about the whole year, like that, it's such a long time. I know it goes by fast, but for me, it feels overwhelming to think about, you know, to pick a word for the year. So I've done that in the past. I won't be able to think about what words I used, I don't think. I've done it for a good couple of years, if not more, but I do find that I don't stick to that word for the whole year. I change it at some point, which I suppose is fine too. I don't think that there's necessarily a right or a wrong way to do it, but that is one thing that I notice when I think about, or just listen to other people talk about the new year and new year's resolutions and stuff. I just think, like, gosh, like, I don't know where I'll be at, where my family will be at, you know, 7-8 months, sometimes even just 3 months into the year. Right. So I do find it a bit overwhelming. So it's not that I don't spend time thinking about it. I do, but I tend to think about it more like the first part of the new year, which the way I look at it is kind of going back to like the seasonal thinking. So I think about, okay, after Christmas, we're already going to be into the winter season, but I really, there's all the excitement and stuff. So we're just so focused on that and the holidays that I just think about the new year being like, kind of like, how do we get through this cold, dark winter in a way that feels okay to each of us? So there's that. And then this year we've been as a family, and I think individually talking a little bit more, I guess, as the kids are getting older, maybe goal setting. And one thing that I pulled out from years ago was like the SMART goals. And I was talking with the kids about, well, what is a SMART goal? And I gave, you know, like the acronym. So like it's specific, measurable. I wrote it down: attainable, realistic, timely. That's how I remember it. The words might be a bit different, but I found that to be such a useful tool when, like, for myself and then hopefully for the kids too. And we did, oh, you know what we did? I'll just share this one example quickly. So this wasn't for the new year, but I think we will continue to try to have it for the new year as well. We tried to, like myself and the kids, write out a SMART goal. And I want to say we used ChatGPT. This was a few weeks ago, to help us with it, and took we had the overall goal of getting out of the house together in a smoother fashion with everybody keeping their cool, you know, not forgetting stuff, maybe leaving on time. I forget what all it was, but leaving the house can be a thing, right? So we had gotten to a place where we've been so busy, and I mean, a lot of it was me feeling overwhelmed again, getting all of the things and stuff. And so I was like, let's, you know, turn this into a SMART goal. But to be able to break it down like that, just even helped to have the whole conversation so that the kids weren't left to guessing what I meant and what I was kind of hoping for and stuff. And then they were able to really talk about or share what they thought leaving the house should look like, or what would work for them, what wouldn't work for them. So that, just to provide an actual example, that's been something I think we'll try to move forward with when we talk about the new year, which we're going to be doing pretty soon, because I do like to have those conversations before Christmas, just to kind of plant some seeds. What was the one other thing? Oh, I just wanted to mention the other reason, and I think Erin, you had just mentioned like walking and hiking and having those goals. Our families kind of got into, like, a little bit, not a lot, some of us more than others, have got into fitness. So I actually got an early Christmas present. I got one of those indoor like walking pads, so not a treadmill, but it's just for walking. Everyone's using it and having a good time with it, but I think like Haley, you mentioned habits. And I said, I don't usually do this, but for this, and I really, walking just is such, it's something that's on high on my joy list. I think to make it a habit, I was reading a bit about it. My husband was talking about it. We're talking about it with our youngest. It has to become a habit if you realistically want to. So I'm going to experiment, I think, and explore and try different ways. But my youngest has really gotten into fitness as well. He's got some fitness related Christmas gifts and stuff. And I just have in the back of my mind, we'll see if it happens, to talk about like those SMART goals again and see, I mean, if he's interested, right? They were very into it the first time we talked about it, and we were playing around with it a bit. But I find for myself, it doesn't just help with the conversation with others, but it's less overwhelming for me, I think, if I can, you know, get it down on pen and paper and kind of break it down a bit. So Yeah,
I think that's great. And I love there's two things that I loved. I loved what you said about having a seasonal focus. I think that's really cool. And I'm going to mention another book now, but another book that I love is called The 12-Week Year, which I don't know if you've heard of that or not, but that's because lots of people break their year down into quarters, don't they? And they have quarterly goals. And this is kind of another take on that, I suppose. But they talk about, rather than having a quarter, you think about each quarter as a complete year. And somehow that motivates you more to, you know, keep those habits, like you said, front of mind. Because I laughed when you were saying, Ashley, about not being able to bring your words of the year to mind, because I I mean, I haven't set a word of the year for this year yet, but in the past, I definitely cannot bring my word of the year to mind partway through the year sometimes. And I do have to, you know, I do have to kind of revisit that and think about that. So I think it's definitely, there's definitely something about when you have that massive expanse of time, it's easy to forget, isn't it, what you want to be intentional about without kind of coming back and having some way to be reminded of it. And the second bit I like is the bit that you said about actually writing down your SMART goals and talking to your children about how you're actually going to get that done. And kind of I think there's somebody said somewhere I've read about how it's much more effective if you can actually think about when you're going to do that SMART goal and where you're going to do, you know, where you're going to do it. So you've actually got, you know, concrete kind of not just that you're going to run every day, but you've actually thought through exactly how you're going to do that. And so how you can set yourself up for success in the best way. So when you, you know, whether it's things like getting your clothes out or setting alarms, whatever it is that helps you to remember, you've already kind of walked through in your mind how you can actually make it a reality rather than it being kind of abstract.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think too about the idea of kind of maybe rather than taking something and trying to kind of push it in or force it into our week, looking for the opportunities that are already in our week that would actually be enjoyable. Because often the things I feel we want to do, they are enjoyable. But when we put, for me anyway, when I put the word goal there or even habit, like it's absolutely true that things are much easier once they become habit. But it feels somehow different when you start putting words to it. But if I can think about so just the walking, for example, something I started doing a lot in the summer and fall, I think, is I was looking at my week and I was like, okay, where will I be on this day? And where would there be a trail or where would there be an interesting? And so then it's kind of like, I'm looking forward to, like I'm building that time in to stop and explore that place and have that hike, and almost using different language in my mind, like I get to do this rather than I have to, because it is something that I do want to do. It's not, you know, I think we can take a motivation and make it less appealing by the structure we put it around or the language. And so I found that really helpful to kind of look forward to these different places that I would get to explore. And I think if I partnered that with something else, like I've become really fascinated for quite a few years now, just by like local maps and just the local geography of places. So even just ahead of time, like looking and being like, okay, so when I'm walking there, I'm parallel with this, or I'm just these kind of nerdy little things that I do, but it kind of pairs it with another interest. I mean, I know people do that with music and running and things like that. But for me, I just find it kind of becomes more of like a natural activity than this is something like I've set my goal and like I absolutely need to meet it. But I wanted to just tap into about that seasonal piece, Haley, because I do think that I tend to think quarterly. Like I do think that that's part of it for me too, is that I think by season. So if I was, you know, if I was talking to the kids, for example, going into the winter time, it was probably for us less about really getting concrete about the year ahead or the season ahead, and more just about me thinking, okay, well, so to me, that's our snowboarding season. Like that's what comes to mind for me. So just kind of talking about, okay, so, you know, this is what we're going to be doing this season. How do we want to, I'm just trying to think back to, you know, so how do we want to manage, this was always a conversation, how do we want to manage the newspaper routes when we're so late getting back after a full day of snowboarding? That was always a Friday night thing to figure out. And then it's kind of like, that kind of brings in some intention and some figuring out together. It's not a resolution, but it's looking ahead to the next season and acknowledging, okay, there's a change in activity because it's a new season. So what do we all think about that? And sometimes it was really fun stuff too, right? It would be like, you know, what are we thinking about meals when we're doing snowboarding? Do we want to shop ahead? What's everybody's favorite stuff? You know, how do we want to look at this? Because I think I mentioned, it might've been in the episode about lists actually, that I read all these things about families sitting down and having planning meetings and goal setting. I think I said this. And when I've tried to do that, my kids just kind of look at me like, what are we doing? Why are we talking about this? We already know what we're doing. And I don't know if it's just because it's not that natural to me that it's kind of, maybe it's awkward in the way that I bring it forward and they pick up on that. But sort of sitting down and having like a planning meeting. And I know a lot of families do that in a really positive way, right? They check in, they collaborate, they maybe have, you know, snacks around it. But for me, it just hasn't really, it has felt forced. So what am I saying? I guess I'm saying that I think we still talk intentionally about the season ahead, but maybe I just wanted to say that in case there are other families who are also reading about how well that works for families, but they're thinking that doesn't really fit for us. Yeah. If there are, I see you. That's us. So.
Yeah. I think when you shared that the first time, Erin, I think I probably shared, if I didn't, I was definitely thinking it, that that's similar for us. I feel like maybe I was talking about the joy list about it a little bit too. I can't remember, but with the joy list, I get excited, but maybe I get too excited. So that, again, going back to the presentation of it, and the kids are kind of looking at me like, you know, with their eyes rolling a little bit, right? Like, oh, here mom goes again. So I'm learning to bring it in a little bit and quiet down a bit. Not that there's anything wrong with them seeing our excitement, but it does make me think too. I mean, maybe that just doesn't work for every family in that way. And that's okay too, like you said, but I also wonder, and I'm curious what it'll look like for our family as the kids get older. So, you know, maybe, and I think it just depends sometimes too, because I know with the joy list, we've brought those out multiple times and I get different reactions from them. I think just based on how they're feeling that day too. But yeah, I think that's a nice thing to mention, Erin, because it can look different for every family. And lots of times for us, these types of conversations, the way they look is very informal and casual and like on a car ride, or, you know, it's a 5 minute thing. It's not when I thought, well, we could all sit down and do this for a good 20 minutes or longer, but it was just a quick 5 minute conversation and we're on to something else. And that's okay too. Like there's lots of different ways that we can be intentional with these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's funny because, you know, both my husband and my daughter, they are big list makers and they do like to plan. So it's not that they don't. I think maybe it's just we all have a different style. So when I've tried to bring it together, it kind of didn't fly. Haley, I should report. So I just did a festive joy list. And So, you know, we were talking about lists and how I realized that I do make lists, but I make them in my head and I don't write them down as much. But I actually did the practice of writing down the festive joy list, which was so helpful because kind of what you mentioned at the beginning, Haley, of the holiday season and feeling like there can be lots of things, and just as a way of, just as a way of prioritizing some things. But again, looking at it more as like a menu rather than a to-do list. And also just putting them down because they are priorities, not because I think that's the beautiful thing about, the spirit that we're talking about this in, as far as doing things gently. Like, it's funny how certain words, whether it's goals or lists or whatever, carry a certain weight in my mind, but we can redefine that, right? So when we're doing that from a place of wanting to prioritize what's important to us and what brings us joy, that feels really different. But it's hard to get out of that headspace of
Yeah, I totally get that. But you see, I think I must just be really forgetful, because I'm in awe of you when you talk about making lists and having them in your head, because mine would just fall out of my head. So that's why I have to write lists on pieces of paper. I mean, not that I can always find my pieces of paper.
Curious.
I don't know which one of you it was. Maybe it was you, Ashley. You were just talking about when you're when you bring out the joy lists, and sometimes your children aren't quite as in awe of the idea of doing it, and maybe they sense with our enthusiasm sometimes, even though we don't mean it, our children can feel that sort of pressure. And I feel like for me, sometimes I can get very enthusiastic and my children will roll their eyes and laugh and say, oh, she's going to find a book on it now, and that kind of you know, I've gone into that kind of over enthusiastic about a, you know, a project that they want to do. And I kind of have to remind myself to step back and let them take ownership of it. And I feel like sometimes when I write things down, I write them down and they're there. But it also means I'm not going to, I don't know how to explain this. I'm not, it kind of quells my enthusiasm a little bit. So I'm not then over the top in terms of them. You know, I'm kind of like, oh, there's a list. And you can, as you said, Erin, you can pick from this menu of, you know, like maybe there's a project they want to do and I've got an idea for some books that they might want to get out of the library or something like that. I could write a list, give that list to them. And then I'm kind of, I've done my bit of being enthusiastic, but I'm not, I've kind of done that without having to, without going on at them a bit and putting them off it, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah, definitely does. I think that makes a lot of sense. And I don't think I have a lot to say about this, but I want to quickly mention it because I think it's helpful for me to think about things when, and it keeps coming up, is like the idea of internal motivation and external motivation. You know, when you're talking about goals and stuff, but even things like joy lists and talking about things that you might want to do and stuff. And I think sometimes it's, you don't need to think too much about, well, I guess it depends on your situation, where whether you individually have to think about your internal motivations to wanting to do something or your external motivations. But I think for myself, it's very helpful when I'm thinking about the kids. And again, I don't have a lot to say about that, but that kind of keeps coming up into my mind, in that the way our goals or our intentions, I guess, roll out, or our children's, probably does have a lot to do with coming back to the underlying motivations and reasons behind those things. And I know I've talked about that a little bit with my kids, but I'd like to talk about it with them a little bit more so that they're thinking about it, but also so that I'm reminded that they have their own motivations, and I want them to have their internal motivations that drive them when they are thinking about setting goals and stuff, so that they kind of stay focused on just listening to their own inner voice rather than, you know, different things like what might please other people or what might impress other people. So I don't know if I haven't thought that. I was just talking off the top of my head there, but
no, you,
does that make sense?
It's brilliant. Yeah. Okay. No, yeah. It's brilliant. And you you've totally said it, because that is the thing. I don't want to step on my children's internal motivation. Yeah. I don't want to put them off this great idea that they've had. Also, there's an element of me, or not an element, there's also the fact that I take my responsibility very seriously, and I feel like I want to be facilitating whatever I can. But yeah, there's a kind of line that you're straddling there, isn't there, that you kind of want to offer a menu. And I think that word menu is so important. Like we've talked about invitations before, these are ideas, they're invitations, they're things that they can explore. Not that we're saying they have to do them, but these are possibilities, I suppose. So there's that side of it. And then there's the other side of also having, you know, a great level of trust in them and knowing that their ideas are going to be just as good, and often are going to be even better than the ideas that I've had. So it's kind of, yeah, it's straddling that line, isn't it, between being there to support them and help them and encourage them and facilitate stuff, but also recognizing that they are very capable of doing all those things themselves, and that you know, I want to be an equal partner in this partnership, but I don't, but I also recognize that my side of the partnership is it's not necessarily an equal partnership in the sense that it's their life and it's their project and it's their idea, and I don't want to overstep the mark. So that is so thank you, Ashley, because you did help me to kind of articulate that, and I hope that it makes sense to people that are listening.
Well, and then that makes me think from what you said there too, Haley, that straddling that line. And I think that is where we get tripped up a lot as parents. And I think especially when people are trying to understand self-directed learning, right? And think about what that looks like. And it does feel like there's that line of like, I'm the facilitator, so I'm offering a menu and I'm strewing and I'm doing these things versus I'm kind of standing back and letting things roll. And you're right. We are sort of, it's a dance a lot of the time where we're trying to figure out kind of where to land on any given day. And that's where I think the relationship piece is so important, because I think if we're pushing a little bit too far, like as you said, Haley, your kids might joke, oh, mom's going to find a book on this or whatever. For me, it was always a map. Oh, here goes mom. She's grabbing an atlas, right? So it's just like, they're able to, often we're able to kind of joke about those parts that we know about each other. And then if it is something that feels a little bit more serious and it feels like maybe we're pushing or the opposite, holding back too much, there's space for that, I think, in a relationship that's been respectful.
And it's that listening piece, isn't it? And our paying attention, being mindful to pick up those cues, but also listening to, you know, to actually what they're saying to us as well. And as you say, Erin, having that respect for them and what they have to say is so important. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Ashley.
I was just going to quickly add, I'm going back to the joy lists again, because we do use them so much. I think that's why I'm okay when the times that I do pull out the joy list and I ask them, we did one, the festive list this year. And from what I remember, I got a decent amount of feedback and ideas from the younger one, but my older one gave me less. But I was okay with that, because I think just me asking, just me taking the time to pull this out, pull them aside, ask them. I think I tried it this year together with both of them and then separately as well. But just giving them that opportunity, showing them that, and because I do that, you know, probably roughly four times a year, maybe a bit more often, I think that it's okay if I don't get a lot back, that there's still value in taking the time to ask, like what you guys are saying, right? And giving the space to listen. And I mean, mine are 11 and 8, right? So they're still somewhat young. So my hope is that by practicing this with them now, I'll continue to ask them these questions and look for their, what's the word I'm looking for? Not contribution. Like their input, because it does matter to me whether they have something to give me or not. You know, it's great when they do, but it's totally okay if they don't too. But that there's that space that they have to, and I hope that as they get older, that allows them to share, you know, whatever that they do choose to share, not just when we pull out the joy list, but about anything. So
I was just going to say, you're opening the conversation, aren't you? You're showing them very directly that you care about what their opinion is and what their input is. You're inviting them to make whatever level of, give you whatever level of feedback that they want to back again. But you're setting that precedent that what they say matters and what they feel matters. And obviously, I'm sure they feel that very much. Sorry, Erin, go on.
No, it was okay. No, I think it's all kind of very related. I was thinking about the word intention, not so much from a New Year's perspective in this instance, but like when you're saying that, when you've each kind of added on to that piece there, the idea that, I think we talked about this in the episode with Esther. It was about de-schooling. It was the idea that that our de-schooling is something that we're continuously working on. And so the intention shines through for our kids. So even though we're not specifically talking about maybe like schooly stuff right now, but just the idea that I think if our children see that our intention is to partner with them and, you know, be looking for good opportunities, but not forcing them into those. And if they have had a history of seeing us try to figure things out in ways that are, you know, respectful and sensitive, you know, yeah, we're going to miss the mark at times, but that history of them understanding our intention, I think is really strong. So it's, I think parents can get concerned about like making a mistake, and we're always going to make mistakes. And I think especially when we're talking about this idea of sort of self-directed learning or unschooling, it's, as you said, Haley, like there's just this line all the time that people are often not too sure how to walk on. But I think just knowing, like, it's going to be work to figure it out all the time. You know, because I will have people say to me now that my kids are older, people will say, well, you know, you've got something about, you know, now that you have it all figured out. And I, like, I don't at all have it figured out. Like each day, I'm still thinking things through with different relationships, right? Whether that's my kids, whether it's my husband, like I'm always thinking through how do we interact respectfully with people. And it's really not that much different now than that they're older. It's just different stuff. It's just different stuff. Yeah. But each new experience gives you another moment to go, this is okay. This is new. Like I hadn't thought about this. How do I want to? So I think what the muscle that we do build is that respect, that understanding of being sensitive, of having connection, of consent, those sorts of things. Like it's, I'm not suggesting that we don't do a lot of work and that we don't gain a lot of skill, but there's still something new each day that we're sort of, you know, like if I was to think about each of my kids, really each of the people in my life, there's usually something where I'm kind of like, I wonder if they might like to know about this, or maybe that's too much information right now because they're already managing this. Like it's that thoughtfulness, I think, that is never figured out. We just keep, all that's figured out is that we need to keep figuring it out. I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, I think seeing that as an opportunity is a really important mindset shift as well, isn't it? That, as you said, we're all going to make mistakes, Erin, and mistakes are really just opportunities for us to learn more and for us to reflect. And you know, it may be that our mistake means that we need to apologize to our children, or that we want to apologize to our children. It might, you know, there can be times where we do overstep the mark, or we're in a bad mood or whatever it is, things happen and we regret what happened, and then we get the opportunity to model things like repair for our children, and we get to deepen those relationships. Because often when you, if you're in an atmosphere where people feel able to say how they're feeling, and they feel respected, then if they're able to bring something to the table and there's an element of conflict, then often if both parties are respectful, then often those moments of conflict actually lead to a deepening of your relationship. So those, I mean, I think, I don't know. Yeah. If we can try and see those mistakes, I wrote a blog post about mistakes. Actually, I can't remember what the title of it was, but yeah, the more we can think about mistakes, you know, cause there are a few mistakes that are, you know, that you can't come back from, but those are very, very few and far between, aren't they? Most mistakes are minor mistakes. So, you know, our mistakes are opportunities for us. Yeah. Opportunities for all kinds of things, deepening relationships, learning more about ourselves, learning more about other people, being able to reflect on better ways of communicating or dealing with whatever the issue is next time. You know, and that's a beautiful thing, isn't it? If we can if we can get if we can have that mindset shift, because then life is just, I don't know, a little bit easier, and we can be a little bit kinder to ourselves and have more compassion for ourselves, which hopefully then enables us to have more compassion and kindness for other people when they, you know, make mistakes, or we might view whatever they've done as a mistake or something.
I think looking at things in that more open way too maybe helps not hold so tight, like when we're talking about the idea of new beginnings in the new year, not hold so tight to something. I think that's why I've seen a lot of people move away from the word resolution, because resolution has a very, you have to have resolve. you're moving toward, you're going to meet that goal. And I think at times that could be really good. There might be some things that are really important to have that resolve and really, but for many things, if we are too fenced in, and have pushed ourselves too much in a particular direction, then we might stick with something longer than it makes sense, or we might miss other opportunities that come up. And I don't know, I was just curious about whether either of you, like sometimes when I think about the idea of like new beginnings and a new year, it can feel it could just feel overwhelming. And sometimes for me, I often get lost in the practical of things. So it's like, I'm just going to use camping as an example. So in order to maybe get a campsite that would work well for us, you often have to book several months ahead of time. So I get a little bit caught up in things like that, like all the things I feel I need to remember. And that's where I think a list could be really helpful. Haley, because I hear people say I write it down and it's out of my head. The problem with me is I end up losing the list. So then I'm no further ahead. But for me, I can get a little bit stuck on those kinds of things, on those details. And those are things that I feel sometimes we're like asking family members way ahead to commit to stuff that, and we're trying, you know, I'm using we, maybe I just should be speaking for myself, but camping is just one example, but it's like, there's something that you have to book ahead, or you have to whatever. And so there's just that reality that, you know, but you're also trying not to make it all about that, like be too pressuring with it. So normally I've just said it really practically, like if we're going to do this in July, then we need to think about booking it right now. But yeah, I can get lost in those things. And I think in parenting and in homeschooling, you get into things like registrations. And like, I can remember things for soccer. If you didn't register the first night, there was less chance that, you know, you might get the nights that you wanted. Like, you can get lost in the practicalities of like dates and not wanting to push kids to make decisions, but on the other hand, knowing they kind of need to if they want it to play out a certain way. I don't know. I don't know if anybody else thinks about that, but I think about that in terms of like everything from holidays to registration for activities or, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's actually something I've been thinking about a little bit more now that you mention it, Erin. And what comes to mind, we don't do like a big or any family vacation every single year. I know some people are able to do that, but we have, like we might have the opportunity to have a family vacation this winter. And so I think that's actually what's been on my mind quite a bit, is thinking ahead. As I mean, I've got one kiddo who will absolutely feel a couple of things, down or disappointed when the Christmas or holiday excitement kind of comes to an end. But then I would be able to say like, oh, remember, we have planned or we are planning this vacation. You know, say if we go away in February or beginning of March, and he's one to really look forward to something too, and is patient and can wait and even enjoys, I think, the buildup and the anticipation. But on the other hand, I've got another kiddo who I'm very much feeling like, okay, if we are going to do, and this is probably why we haven't decided for sure yet, if we do a vacation, that kiddo is going to feel more like, oh, excited on the one hand, but also like what is this really going to be like for me? Because in, you know, just past experiences, being away from home comes with its own challenges, and there's excitement, but especially sleeping away from home has been challenging for this one kiddo. So yeah, I think, you know, when you're thinking about vacation, there's a lot of practicality you have to take into consideration, timelines, especially. My husband would have to book time off work, you know, all these things. It can't really be a last minute vacation, but it can be tricky to put on a kiddo to say, because we do definitely factor that in. We don't want to drag either of them along on, you know, what would probably be a week long vacation that we couldn't just end early if it really wasn't going well. So yeah, I think that that makes a lot of sense with certain things. And I think another one that we are not really experiencing, but a lot of parents can relate to, is the signing up for things, like you said, the registering. And I know we've talked on this podcast before about, you know, talking to kids of all different ages about something that they might want to do, and you sign them up, and then it's, they decide, you know, at some point, this isn't for me, or I don't want to continue anymore. And it's like, oh my gosh, do we let them quit or not quit? And that whole conversation, right? And that's just really challenging. So I think that that can be useful. And it, like the registering for things, I don't know if it's the same everywhere. I know some things you kind of sign the kids up and they're in there for the whole school year, like kind of September to June or something like that. But I know around here, a lot of people are talking about like the, I think they're referring to it as like the winter term. So they're kind of having to make choices, or maybe they already have at this point, to sign up for another 3 or 4 months, whatever it would be. And I think it does cause quite a bit of stress that can be something to navigate during an already somewhat tricky part of the year, stressful part of the year. I wanted to mention, just to refer back really quickly, you had mentioned the conversation around deschooling Aaron with Esther. So if anyone wanted, because we touched on that quite a bit, that was episode 20, I think, Deschooling Imperfectly, The Beauty of Intention. So just for our listeners, if anyone wanted to go back to that. And then I also think I found your blog post, Haley. Was it the 10 benefits of making mistakes, that post?
Oh, that's the one. Yes.
Okay, thank good. You. I just wanted to quickly mention those things because I was able to pull those up.
Oh, thank you.
Perfect. Yeah. You know, thinking about the seasonal thing, Ashley, something that I see happen here a lot, because hockey is such a big thing in Canada. And I have, you know, had conversations with parents and friends and relatives where there's all this decision-making around, you know, rep hockey, which is kind of like all-star hockey versus, well, there's various levels of leagues, right? And these conversations, and I can see how much pressure there can be on fairly young kids around, well, if you go on this team, you'll get a lot of play, but on this team, you might not get as much play, but you might get to travel or you might get to whatever. And it can feel like a lot of pressure, right? It can feel, because those decisions do need to be made quickly. They're not even always in your hands if you try out and you don't make the team, but then maybe you've said no to another team. So it's funny, like, as much as we can, because what I was going to say, and I still will say it, is I think that by lessening the grip on the outcome of these things and just always realizing, like, whatever we're not doing, we're doing something else. So trying to kind of let go of this idea that there's only one way for, you know, there's only one campsite that will, or one section of camping that will work for us, or there's only one activity. Like, of course, that's not true. So I think if we can lessen that grip on the outcome a little bit, that can be really helpful. But I know the reality too, because I've seen how difficult it can be for people to make those decisions. So I think it's just, as much as we can as parents, it's always just really trying to hold that, just that openness as much as possible, and not attaching ourselves to the outcome while also being realistic that, I mean, sometimes there might be something that, you know, a kid looks at their year ahead and it's, we can see it's not going going to be the end of the earth if something happens, but they're maybe in a particular, they have an interest or they're in a social group or whatever, where it genuinely feels that way to them. So it's like, again, maybe we're holding that gentleness, but not so much that it feels invalidating to their experience. Yeah,
we can be there for them without us catastrophizing as well, can't we? So it's about us giving them the support that they need, and as you say, not invalidating their feelings, because their feelings are obviously their feelings and they're whatever they are. But we can also also try and hold ourselves to remember that this is not, as you said, I think this is not the end. You know, there's still possibilities for perhaps them to do this, for them to do that thing later, or for them to do that thing in a different form, or, you know, that's, and I guess that's one of our really important roles, isn't it? To give them the emotional support that they need, but also to hold the fact that this, to also sort of be, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess it's about them being able to land softly with us, to kind of for us to hold them, to let them, to get the sense that this is not, this is not the end of the world, but we're still validating their feelings. I don't know. I don't know whether I've explained that as well.
I like the sound of that, because I think it's a little bit hard to support our kids in setting their goals, because they are we're looking at it from a different vantage point, right? This is their now, this is their and it can feel really big to them. I liked the way you put that, Haley, in the image that I have, or kind of the words I guess that are coming for me, is just that, like, acknowledging, because we do live in a society that's very performance based, that's very linear focused, that's very, so they will be around coaches and other parents that are saying things like, if you don't try out being a goaltender this year, you know, probably not gonna, you know, you're already nine or whatever. Like, I hear these things said. And so, and I mean, school academic stuff is another way of looking at that. You hear people talking about that. In fact, I was somewhere yesterday where I heard a woman talking about her granddaughter, and her granddaughter had left university. And I think she started in September, and she has decided, I don't know if she finished kind of this term until December, I can't remember. But anyway, she's working right now instead. And she stayed in the city where she had gone away, but she's working. And this grandmother was saying, you know, everybody's saying so relaxed about this and saying she'll find herself, but, you know, there's only a window of time you have to find yourself. You can't. And I'm thinking, well, no, that's not true. That's not true. But that is the messaging that people have, right? That's the messaging that people have. So kids are hearing that from potentially grandparents, potentially, who knows, academic advisors, places, sports coaches, whoever, you know, whoever they're coming across, even if it's messaging in the media, this idea that, I don't know, wasted potential or quitting or learning this before this. So we can be as, you know, welcoming and gentle as we want to be, but I do think we need to validate, particularly as they get older, that they are living in a world where people are very attached to outcomes and order of doing things. Yeah.
And there was, before, Ashley, there was something you were saying that really made me think about a conversation that I had with two of my daughters recently. About, you said something about one of your children looking forward to things, and we were having a conversation about how Some people really enjoy the looking forward, whereas sometimes for other people, it's the looking back and having the memory of things is like really that for them is more important than the looking forward. So one of my daughters was saying she doesn't necessarily like to know everything that's going to happen too far ahead, because she would like to really, she's fine with, you know, these things happening, us saying, you know, a bit closer to the time this is happening. And then what she really enjoys is she gets overwhelmed if there's too much information about what's happening before. But what she really enjoys is looking back on what she's done and enjoying the memories. Whereas the other one was saying they felt like they needed more advance warning of things, and kind of things that have gone are in the past. And not that they don't have happy memories, but do you see what I mean? Their kind of focus was a bit different, which I don't know. You just reminded me of that, Ashley. And I was thinking that that's, as we're talking about New Year, I guess there is also a place for some people really enjoy the reflecting on the previous year and thinking about what they've done. And sometimes we can have a really important role in that, because the classic thing about you ask a child what they've done at school today and they're like, ooh, nothing. And although we're with our children all the time, and or not all the time, but a lot of the time, maybe more than you might be if they were at school, depending on their age. But, you know, we may have more of an idea of the detail of what they've done. But also our children sometimes can get in that mindset as well, where they're kind of like, oh, I don't know what I've done in the last week, can't remember. Whereas, you know, if we're able to sometimes remind them of the things that they've done, then for some children that's really helpful, because that can get all those happy memories going, and that might be the kind of person they are. So that just came to me now, thinking about how sometimes it's really, before we even start about this goal setting, if we're of that mindset, before we look forward, sometimes it can be really nice in tandem with that to also look back and acknowledge the successes, whatever you define success as, you know, acknowledge the nice things from last year. And I know one of my daughters it looks like a vision board, but it's actually kind of a memory board of her year that's just gone. And, you know, so she'll have photographs and then she'll have quotations that sum up how the year's been, and maybe some words of that kind of, you know, come to her about what that year's been about. And so those are kind of nice rituals that some people have around the start of a new year and the year that's just gone.
Oh, I love that. Ashley, go ahead. You look like you have something to say.
I have just two words that come to mind as you're talking about that, Haley. For me, it's bringing up, like, I'm thinking about how it's such an opportunity. And it, of course, it's okay if not every personality, you know, does that and spends time reflecting. But I just think about the opportunities for like highlighting or celebrating growth. And then also like having gratitude is kind of coming up for me as well when looking back. And I think, I mean, it can be beneficial probably for everyone, but time just goes. And I sometimes listen to my kids talking, and well, I have one kid who has really good memory. And now I'm asking myself, as I listen to you talk about it, the memory is obviously strong, but I wonder how much appreciation there is for those memories. So I'm curious about that, and I want to go back and ask questions around that. But my other guy, I find myself talking about gratitude with him quite a bit, because it just seems to help, I don't know, not calm him down, but just make him feel a little bit better. But also, you know, when you can reflect back on the year and take the time to like pull out examples and say like, oh, remember that time? And oh, remember when you weren't doing that yet? And now you are doing that, just to highlight and celebrate all that growth. And I think about the confidence that can come from that. So that's all I really wanted to say. But growth and gratitude were coming up for when you do have opportunities to reflect on the past year.
Yeah, I like that, Haley, or sorry, Ashley, about the idea of gratitude, and it makes me think about this assumption that that we have to start something fresh in the new year. And it makes me think like we might be in looking back at what we're grateful for and what we enjoyed in the year prior or, you know, years prior. Sometimes it's just a continuation, or it's maybe, you know, maybe you're veering off in a particular direction of something, but I feel like this pressure of, you know, we're following a particular calendar year. And so we need to have some fancy goal. I think that that's probably what a lot of people, it doesn't fit that well for a lot of people. So I like that, bringing that gratitude piece into it and just that reflection piece. And then Haley, that is so interesting that you guys had that conversation, because now I'm curious, like I'm thinking about myself, and I'm trying to, it makes me think about how my family teases me a little bit because I take a lot of pictures and I take a lot of video, not necessarily like in their face, but more like if we are somewhere, just experiences of places or certain things we're doing. And the joke that they have is that I should never mind about that. I should just be present in the moment. And so I thought about that, and I get what they're saying, but I think for me, I am a very reflective person. So I think it's two things. I do like to have a record of that. I also think very chronologically. So whereas other people might take the pictures in their phone, most other people I know would have like a folder for pets, for example, or a trip somewhere or whatever. I don't have that. I, if someone asks me for a picture of somebody, my mind goes, oh, what was the date of that? Or what was that October of 23? And I can find it. I just prefer it that way. I think in time. So I think for me, it's been, what was I going to, oh, I know what it was I was going to say about this. I can actually, in a moment of gratitude, I can actually find it overwhelming in the moment. So it's almost a way of preserving the moment, but not, and I'm sure, you know, there could be all sorts of analysis about that, but it's like, if I'm somewhere, like, let's just say nature and something happens, yes, it's wonderful to see an incredible bird fly overhead, but I can almost get too overwhelmed with the moment. So it's almost like a bit of a distraction in a good way to capture a picture of it. And then I can kind of look at it later in a different kind of state. And it's funny because I was just having a conversation with a mom yesterday. Her son is very, very, he gets very excited about holidays, and he has some verbal, so he's not always able to express verbally. He speaks, but he's not always able to fully maybe express the level of emotion he's feeling. And so what he tends to do when people focus too much on Halloween coming or his birthday or Christmas or whatever, he'll eventually get to the point where he'll just say it's canceled, because it's almost like a coping strategy of like, I'm just going to cancel it. And then anything that happens is above what I'm expecting, if that makes any sense. So they've just observed over the years that this is something that really works well for him. And it's kind of a strategy that he's developed that's pretty consistent if people are talking too much about a holiday. But Haley, to your point about reflecting, he loves to have lots of pictures and lots of stories and to be able to go back and look at those. And he has an extremely historical mind. So like for actual history, but even like history of their own family and what they're doing. So putting a lot of focus on it ahead of time is very anxiety inducing. But once it's happened, he can go back and enjoy it. So it's funny the way that our minds work. But anyway, yeah, that'll just make me think about how, originally how much my family teases me about that. But I'm like, no, it works for me. Can't quite explain it. My phone's always way too loaded up, but on some level it needs to work.
it's fascinating how our minds do work so differently, because I could never recall the dates and time in a chronological fashion like you were saying, Erin. And I remember you have mentioned that before, and I remember before thinking how amazing that was that you can do that when I can't. But I love the fact that you're actually extending the present moment, and you're extending that gratitude, aren't you, by doing that, really.
Yeah, and it's funny that you say, Haley, because I can see why you would think that. I think to people in my immediate life, it feels very disorganized, right? Because in their minds, it's like put it in the folder so you know where to. But I'm like, no, my mind just works differently. So I'm always amazed that people are organized enough to do those practical things. So it's just, yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah, just how differently we process things and really how we make things work for ourselves, right? In whether it's organizing or goal setting or, yeah.
I think that that's why it's important to have, like, I'm going back to you guys were talking at the beginning. I know we were using this in a different way around having like a menu of options. And now I'm thinking like a menu of strategies or a menu of tools instead of this idea of, you know, we have to teach our children the best strategies to keep their room clean so that they can be a clean, organized person, or, you know, give them the most effective tool for, you know, to solve whatever problem or to experience a moment. And I think there's, you know, opportunity to facilitate sharing, like have a menu of options, right? Oh, I've tried this before, that worked for me, or this works for so-and-so, or have you ever tried that? You know, and spreading those out or sprinkling them around in time, kind of just when they come up in life, I don't think there's anything wrong with sharing different ideas or, you know, making suggestions or something, because that's how we all learn about things, but not kind of judging too soon what might work for someone, or you're seeing your kid do something that you're like, oh, I would never do that, but kind of trusting that there's a reason that they're doing that, you know, canceling the holidays, that could really bother some people, right? Or really upset some people. But trusting that there's a reason and that it might, you know, actually be something they're doing that's really helpful. So I'm just, kind of thinking about, because I know as parents, we obviously want the best for our kids. And if we come across a tool or a strategy that works really well for us, you think, I know I've thought, like, I just want to pass that on to them. You know, if I see them struggling with something similar, but I don't know. I might have a good guess on whether that might work for them or not, and I could share it. But I think to stay very open and just offer it and then, you know, let them decide whether they even want to try it or not. So I hope that makes sense, because I'm not giving any examples, but I just thought back to that kind of having a menu again of tools and strategies and not kind of judging too soon, I guess, when we see them using something that might not make sense to us right away.
Yeah. Well, it's the hardest thing, isn't it? When we have something that's worked really well for us and we try to excitedly tell somebody else, but it's not the right timing or it's not a fit.
I think there was one more thing I wanted to say. I really appreciate both of you flagging up the joy lists again, because that is something, I know we talked about the festive joy lists in the festive episode, but joy lists, I do have a blog post about joy lists, and joy lists were they were like the first kind of project, I suppose, that we did when we started home educating, was that we wrote joy lists together, and we thought about the things that we wanted to do on a regular basis, the things that brought us joy. You know, maybe they were one-off things, but some of them were things that we wanted to do every week, or we wanted to do every few weeks, whatever. But I really like, we've been talking a lot about being intentional, and one of my strongest intentions, and I guess my prime objectives, one of my, you know, the things I really want to do in terms of my family culture and my home education, I guess, is that I want my children to enjoy their life. I mean, I want them to embrace all parts of life. So it's not just about enjoying life. I want them to, you know, to have all the experiences. But joy is a really important thing for us to prioritize. And that's, you know, we can do joy lists any time of the year. They don't have to be at the new year, but because we tend to have such a focus in the new year about thinking about how we want to organize our lives going forward, and it kind of seems like it's a very, you know, it's just an arbitrary day, really, isn't it? But it, it you know, there's a lot of energy around making changes, I guess. So it can be helpful sometimes. That idea of looking at, looking at what you enjoy and how you can bring more of that into your life is a really, I think, a really powerful thing to do. And that actually reminded me of one of the things that we like to do is we're all a bit, you know, I've mentioned it before. I think, you know, in our family, we do, most of us anyway, are really into writing lists and are into the idea of intentionally thinking about our habits. And one of the things that we do every year, or we have done, at least half of us have done every year for the last few years, is the Goodreads annual reading challenge. And I think, not that I'm suggesting that everybody needs to do that, but the reason I'm bringing it up is because I think sometimes when we think about how we want to feel or how we want to be in life, we can think about activities or feelings that we want to have, and then we can think about how we can make those happen. And sometimes if we have a framework like a challenge, let's say, that can help us to bring those things into our regular lives. So, you know, for us, we enjoy reading, and reading's an important thing to most of us in our household. So having something like the annual reading challenge that focuses your mind on how many books you want to read, what kinds of books you want to read, is a really nice thing to do. And in the past, we've just spoken about gratitude, and in the past we've done gratitude challenges where we do that thing where you sit, you know, you think of three things every day that you're grateful for, or, you know, once a week we'll perhaps, when we're all sitting around the table at dinner or something, we'll ask each other what we've been grateful for. Or I'll be particularly minded, you know, when they were younger, sometimes I would think of to ask them at bedtime, you know, not every day, but there would be times where it would be something that I'd try and remember to ask them about. And you mentioned before about exercise, Erin, and, you know, if we can find ways to make it fun, I guess I'm thinking, whatever the things are that we want to bring into our lives, for us anyway, challenges, we find quite fun. Not everybody does. Some people might find them a bit as a source of pressure. Whereas I guess we're holding these things quite lightly and not getting too attached to having to get to a certain number of things, or, you know, it's a goal or an aim, but it doesn't have to, you know, we're not going to beat ourselves up if we don't complete it.
Well, I think that idea of having, I think you used the word framework. What came to mind for me, and I've never done it before, but the NaNoWriMo, the novel writing in the month of November. I think it's for the month of November, and it seems to happen every year, and people across the world, don't they just, they have a goal for a certain number of words written or whatever. I know Sue Elvis has, either she has done it or her kids have done it, but I know some other people who have as well. And that's what that kind of reminds me of, where you have this, it's almost like you're tapping into collective energy around something like that, where there's a certain challenge or there's a certain, and I would say that even something like, this sounds like a much smaller goal than writing a novel, but even like an advent calendar. So for example, my daughter and I do this virtual advent calendar, and we will sometimes miss a night if, like, maybe she's working or I'm working or whatever, but we wouldn't normally miss more than two nights, and then we kind of go back and catch up. And like you're saying, Haley, like, there's nobody's telling us to do it where it doesn't really matter. Except that it kind of matters, because it's sort of part of what we've planned to do, if that makes sense. So I think sometimes having that external framework, whether it's as big as a novel writing challenge or something small, just like, I mean, if the advent calendar, it's like the new day is revealed virtually. So it's there for you, and you know it's going to be there for you. So it's kind of a nice, but I was thinking too of, if we're talking about kind of like setting goals or thinking about things like around books, there are other, I'm thinking of like library I know lots of places have lifted their library fines. I'm hearing, I don't think we're there yet where we are. So the idea of having due dates with library books can actually be really nice, because it's just, you have a certain set of times. I mean, we can typically renew them, so it's not such a big deal, but there's something about having a pile of library books that feels a bit different than having a pile that you've purchased, because there's just something there that gives you a little bit of an external framework. And if you don't read them, you don't read them. It's not, you're not getting pushed, but there's just that little, I don't know what I'd call it, but there's something there that gives you
something to help you.
Yeah. A little gentle nudge to read the books. But I just wanted to say, too, Haley, I'm sure you can probably relate to this, coming into any season, whether it's kind of what would be a new school year or the new calendar year, which in the Southern Hemisphere is the same thing, actually, which I think is really handy, would be really handy. But for us, they're two different times of the year. But regardless of, I guess, kind of when it is, I'm sure we can all relate to the idea that we could probably come up with some New Year's intentions for our kids that we think would be a good idea. You know, like I can think about whether it's food, whether it's sleep, whether it's activities, just over the years thinking, oh, it would be great if they worked toward this goal, or maybe working toward keeping this tidy, or adding more of this into their diet or whatever. And I think there are, as we've talked about, there are times and places that we can have those conversations if they feel like they're important enough in that moment, or that it would be important to our child. But I also just wanted to say, having older kids now, how amazed I am at how they come into their own on things that I would have previously worried about, whether that's physical self-care, whether that's goal setting in other areas. So I guess what I'm just saying is, I don't really think we need to teach our children to set resolutions or goals or intentions. I think we can, you know, if it's fun to do as a family, we can talk about that. Or if we notice our child is interested in something, we can support them and encourage them in finding out how we could be helpful with that. But I don't know. I just, as my kids have gotten older, sometimes I look at the things that they're doing and I'm just like, wow, you know, I never would have thought that the kid that I had so much trouble getting into a bathtub would refuse not to shower, you know, immediately after getting home from work. Like, this is so interesting. Or that they've recognized that they would like to go back to an activity that they used to enjoy, and so they very intentionally make time for that. Because so often I'll be kind of thinking it, I'll be like, oh man, they don't play that sport anymore and they used to love it, or they don't really play that game anymore and they used to love it. And then, interestingly enough, it's not always the same as I'm thinking, but often it is. Like a few months later, you see them kind of coming around and making time for it and finding ways to explore that. So I think it's something that we inherently have certain styles toward as human beings.
I would totally agree, Erin, with what you've said. And I think it comes back to what we say so many times about having that trust in our children and recognizing, you know, that they are so capable, and that often so much of what we worry about is a passing phase, really. And, you know, there may be something else that we're going to worry about in the future, but the more we can hold on to the fact that as time passes, most things resolve themselves. It is kind of a lesson that we, yeah, that it's nice to, I feel like that's a lesson that I've learned, and I'm glad of it, and I feel reassured by it, and it helps me with every fresh concern that I have or challenge that I find myself in, that if I can remember to trust them and to have faith in them, that has always it's always seeing me well, I guess. Yeah, mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, things have come and gone and you know, and you're on to the next thing, and just remembering that have that trust. I think that, and I think that that trust works in lots of ways. Not only does that trust help us to feel, I guess, for us to be more reassured, which leads to us being more gentle and less catastrophizing and less stress, so we bring less stress to the house, but also that trust, when people feel trusted, then they tend to live up to that idea of being more trustworthy, whereas the more you don't trust people, the more it's hard for them to have that sense of themselves as being a trustworthy person, I guess. For them mm-hmm. to trust themselves, it's hard, you know. The more we can model that, then the more they can take that on for themselves as well. So it works on all kinds of levels, I think, to help us to live a more peaceful life, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we talk in the podcast a lot about, or we'll say things like learning's always happening. And I've found myself thinking that, but really thinking growing, the growth is always happening, which is learning too. I mean, I guess it's kind of the same thing. but I guess with learning, sometimes the focus can be on more academic stuff. Whereas when I think growth or growing, I'm thinking about beyond academics. And I know now, and I appreciate when I hear people like yourselves talk about it too, it's very reassuring to hear. But I've seen it enough now with my kids too, where I know that when that concern comes up and I'm seeing something and I'm going, oh my gosh. But I just now think, okay, their brain is working on something else right now. I mean, that's simplifying it, and it's much more complicated than that. But that's what I tell myself, that, you know, while I wish, or it would be convenient if they would grow in this one area, their brain is obviously spending time and energy on other things right now. And I will trust that that's happening. And I will trust that the other thing will come in time too, rather than, you know, not to say that we can't help or guide or support. And I guess that's what can be tricky at times, is knowing how much support and help to offer. But just for myself, I keep thinking, if the brain, you know, if we're not doing one thing, that means we have time and energy for something else. And I want them to be focusing on what naturally makes sense for them, because, I mean, that's going to be the best thing for them overall. And I have to trust that the other things will come along. I had another thought, but it's escaped me, so I'm going to leave that there.
I think what you said was so beautiful though, Ashley, because it definitely, then the support that we're able to offer comes with a different energy, mm-hmm. because if it comes from that place of trust and respect, then it's not about us. I guess it's less frantic. It's more peaceful energy. It's going to be more, it feels like it's going to be perhaps more grounded and softer, maybe. And maybe that might be just what they need, rather than us. You know, they don't, I guess what I said before about letting our children kind of land softly is, I don't know, it's so important, I feel like, because then they are not, then their sort of growth and learning is not hampered by our catastrophizing and kind of all our issues or our worries about things. We're kind of leaving it more open for them to grow in a more natural way. Mm-hmm. That's kind mm-hmm. of what it feels like to me anyway. The what you were saying actually kind of made me think of that, and it felt like quite a nice way to think about it.
It makes me think, it kind of circles me back to what I had said at the beginning of the conversation. I'm not sure whether this will connect or not, but the idea of thinking about what part of myself do I want to be more of in the new year, like kind of expanding it even beyond how do I want to feel or a word of the year, to like, you know, what part of myself do I want to be more of or find out more about. And I think when we're talking about trust, it's kind of like, you know, I can't control, or I don't know exactly what's going to come up this year, or what opportunities will be there, or what ones won't be. But it's not so much about controlling the events and the activities as much as it is, who do I want to be in each of those moments, whatever comes up. And so I think about that when I think about trust with our kids. So often I think we are, we're trying to kind of control the conditions, you know, to make things go as well as possible for them. But really, I think, as you said, Ashley, like we just don't know what's happening, something that doesn't make sense to us, but something quite brilliant can be happening as far as their development, or it could be a season of rest that their system needs. Like there's any number of answers to that. But so it's just trusting that, it's trusting in who do I want to be? What's the part of myself that wants to be there with my child? Not so much what are the details of what they're doing or what they're learning. So I think that kind of connects. It connects in my mind at least, but it's just, again, I guess it's looking at what are we bringing to the table rather than what are the conditions and what are other people doing, you know, moving forward into the new year. So
I love that so much, Erin. I feel like you have really circled it back to the beginning. You've made a nice circle there.
Oh,
and also you've wrapped it up very nicely, like a little gift. And I guess also it means that for us, one of the things that's really important for us to focus on is, in order for us to be that positive energy and be the best support that we can, we need to focus on getting the basics right with us, I guess, in terms of us looking after ourselves and making sure that we're getting enough sleep and we're eating properly and we're getting exercise and we're breathing and we're taking time to rest and relax so that we can, because those are the things that we've got more control over, I guess. That is how we then show up for our children, whatever it is that they want or whatever it is that they need or whatever it is that they're intending or, you know, whatever they need or want from us, we are better able to provide it, aren't we, if we've taken care of ourselves.
Yes, so much so. Yeah.
So shall we leave it there? Now that you've wrapped it up so beautifully, Erin.
So yeah, I think that's all I can yeah. I think that's good for me. Yeah.
Oh, well, I've really enjoyed our conversation, and thank you to everyone that's listening, and we hope that you have a very happy 2025, and we'll speak to you very soon.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay.
Happy New Year.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and maybe helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Haley can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. I, Erin, can be found at Everlearning, and Ashley can be found on Instagram at Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves. We'd be very grateful if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might appreciate it. Thank you for your time today.